And as you said, it'll be old pretty soon. We sing it enough. Well, I was talking, and this is not a part of the sermon, I was talking about happiness and the Happiness Project. I learned recently, very recently, how to have everybody happy. I was told that when mother is happy, or shall we say, I was told when mama's happy, everybody's happy. And when mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. So I don't know how true that is, but at least it is something to consider in making sure the house is very, very happy. Excuse me a moment. It's been some time since I gave a sermon, a biography sermon, about a particular person. We do from time to time. I think they're very, very helpful. Usually when we give a sermon on some biographical character, it's about famous men of character that God was able to use and makes for a good hearing. Occasionally we give one about the life of a man who didn't turn out very well, such as Jeroboam and one or two others in the Old Testament. Rarely have I ever heard a full sermon about a female biblical character other than maybe the famous ones like Sarah, Esther, Ruth, and the Proverbs 31 woman. Now, I hope you understand the Proverbs 31 woman was not a real person. She never did exist as such, but it was the story about what a woman would be like. And it's been given many times, always given by men, and sometimes heavily emphasizing that maybe you women need to be this way. So some have gotten to the point that don't give that sermon anymore. I don't want to hear that. I know what the Proverbs 31 woman is supposed to be, and I'm working on it, so just be quiet. Today I thought I'd try something different. The title of the sermon today is The Life and Times of Bathsheba. Now, I know some of you women in your book studies have studied that about Bathsheba, so maybe you've heard a lot about this already. But to my knowledge, I've never given anything here, and prior to that, I never have heard a sermon about the full-length story of Bathsheba. Some would say, Bathsheba, she was one of those bad girls in the Bible, wasn't she? She's the one who seduced David. If she hadn't been out there in the tub, he wouldn't have done what he did. Well, maybe not. It depends on who's telling the story and how they are telling it. How many of you have ever heard a sermon about Bathsheba? That's what I thought. Nobody. Now, I asked in Mansfield last week, and there were, I think, maybe one or two hands went up. I asked in Cambridge this morning, and about five hands went up, and three of them were the ones who were visiting from Mansfield. No, we haven't heard much about the biography of Bathsheba. I've used snippets of her story from time to time, but until recently, never a full sermon on the life and personality and effect of what she did, and in a sense had done to her, affected our history in the Bible. In reading the Bible, you'll only find that the name Bathsheba is found six times. Not all that many times for one that is so well known and such in-house known name or a household word, you might say. Six times. One time, her name is listed as Bathsheba. Not much to go on, I admit, but you can glean somewhat from all of those when you put it all together and you have the related verses all together about Bathsheba and others that were affiliated with Bathsheba. It's quite an interesting story. Bathsheba is world famous, and I mean world famous for one particular incident. Everybody knows of that famous tryst with King David, where they, as they see it, she agreed to come to his bedroom. I think they overlooked the fact that his head, people came and they took her to his bedroom. In some ways, in reading her story, it kind of appears that Bathsheba was a victim. Poor, innocent lady in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong man. On the other hand, and there is always the other hand, it could be said that she was an orchestrator. You know, we hear about people, we deal with that in dealing with the DNR, divorce and remarriage situation. Well, they're just orchestrating this so they can be declared free. Maybe so, maybe not. It is true that there are those, even in the church and certainly in this world, who do orchestrate things for their own profit. And most of the time, a lot of the time, they get away with it. But they don't get away with it if they understood cause and effect. Ultimately, they will pay the price. And if they're orchestrating it, it'll be a very painful price they will pay. As I said, it appears or could appear that she orchestrated the situation. Very aware of herself and of the one-act play in which she played the leading role. Her story begins with an incident in the life of King David. And what happened to him could have been one of the major factors that ultimately caused what happened to happen between the two of them. This incident was at a time in David's life when it appears, because we know that he lived for 70 years and he lived a number of years after the tryst with Bathsheba. Possibly he was around 50 years of age. You'll find this beginning in 2 Samuel 11, and we'll start in verse 1. The story of this starts with David, not with Bathsheba. 2 Samuel 11, verse 1 says, "It happened." And that's the way it is from time to time. It happens, and it happens a lot in life. It happened in the spring of the year at the time when kings go forth to battle or go out to battle. We don't think anything about that now because you can rage war almost any time you want. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, wherever you are, you can wage war. But in those days, they didn't have airplanes, they didn't have trains, they may not have had good roads in all places, so they had to be careful when and how they went to war. And if it was in a foot of snow, they probably didn't want to do that. You know, you can't have the cavalry charging at them with your sword drawn in a foot of snow. So they went to war in the springtime. That was the time to go to war. David sent Joab, his trusted servant as general of the armies, and his, David's servants with Joab, and all of Israel. It was a large enclave he sent to war. They destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But, and this is just in a sense kind of casually thrown in there, but David remained at home at Jerusalem. As I said, it appears that he did die at 70, and this was sometime before that. This possibly could have run around when he was maybe 50 years old, 45, 50, 55, 60. We don't know for sure, but he was a grown man, already had the history of being a fighting man in the sense that he cut the head off Goliath. He fought many other wars. He had been in so many battles, killed so many men, that when he wanted to build the temple for God, God said, "No, not you. The temple, yes, but not you, because your hands are so bloody. You've killed so many men. I don't want the temple for Almighty God to be built by a man with blood on his hands." So David already had a history of being successful in battle. But here, and you will read this in other places, I don't have it marked down exactly where it is, but I've read it. Joab, in essence, told him, we don't need you. Stay home. We can do this without you, so don't bother. You stay home. In essence, a man can take that as, you're not needed. Pro athletes experience this a lot in their younger years. They're powerful, they're famous, they make lots of money. Then they get old, and the crowds don't roar after them anymore. The crowds are looking at some other famous man. The crowds are applauding someone else. And the former rookie that turned pro, that became famous, that was such a hot shot, is no longer the hero. He is unwanted, unnoticed, and left alone to his own faults. David was told, in essence, stay home. We don't need you. We men were made to be needed and to succeed and to glory, in a sense, in the success of our endeavors. And for a 50-year-old man to be told, you don't have it anymore, you may get hurt, we don't need you, stay home, can almost be a killer. It can cut to the very heart and, in a sense, almost slay him. Because at that time, in his and ours, because none of us are truly exempt from this, we are vulnerable. Very, very vulnerable. In life, it's called the midlife crisis. Everything has gone well, but in the middle years of life, there is a crisis. And so it is called midlife crisis, and I hope I'm not offensive in putting it this way, it has been called by others the menopause time. The menopause time. David was at that time in his life, we believe. He was vulnerable. He wasn't needed. He was told to stay home. He was very, very vulnerable. In verse 2, it says, then it happened. And this time, it really did happen. One evening, David arose from his bed. And I suppose many men realize, well, I suppose women too, but as you get older sometimes, you wake up more times at night than you used to because you worked hard, you came home, you ate, you went to bed, and you slept soundly through the night, didn't want to get up the next morning. But as you get older, your strength has waned a little bit, and you wake up one, two, three, or four times a night. And so he, well, for whatever it was, I don't know that this is the reason, but he couldn't sleep as he formerly had done. He rose from his bed and was walking on the roof of his home. And it wasn't this A-frame Minnesota-type roof that keeps the snow from staying up. You can slide a foot of snow off easily. It was this flat roof, and he was walking on it. And from the roof, he saw a woman bathing. So that's no big deal. Jesus didn't say that it was a sin to see a woman or look at a woman or to think a woman was an attractive creature made in God's image. He saw this woman bathing, and I don't think she was washing herself or bathing in a terry cloth robe. I've never heard of that, so we assume from it that she was nude in her birthday suit, and it says she was, didn't say she was kind of cute, it said she was very beautiful, which in modern day terms mean, man, was she ever stacked. She was gorgeous, and I mean in all aspect. Her body was exceedingly beautiful. So he saw that from a distance. Now, as I said, there's nothing wrong in that. All things start with a thought. There's no sin in having a thought. Jesus didn't say it is a sin if you think that the woman is beautiful. He said it is a sin if you allow that thought to cause you to lust after her in your heart, something that's deep-seated internally. David saw her, and she was exceedingly beautiful, and it says that he sent and inquired about her. Now, I don't know why he didn't recognize her immediately. Maybe it was farther away and he just couldn't. But it says that they came back and said, "Is this not Bathsheba?" In essence, he was merely told, or it appears from the way it's written here, that he was merely told it's Bathsheba. I guess you could say they did not come back and say, "Well, we don't know who she is. All we know is that she told us her name is Bathsheba." One would wonder, did David already know who Bathsheba was? They said, "Is not this Bathsheba?" Did she also have previous knowledge of David? It is not said, it's only speculative. Those who inquired, in the King James version of it said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" They didn't say, "Her name is Bathsheba." They didn't say, "We really don't know who she is. All she said is her name is Bathsheba." What they really said was, "David, you realize, of course, this is Bathsheba. And you realize, of course, that she is not only just Bathsheba, she is the wife of Uriah. And she is the daughter of Eliam. And she is the granddaughter of Ahithophel." All three of those David knew. All three were trusted men, servants of David. So they were saying, "Are you sure of what you're doing? You realize, of course, who she is and the calamity that this will cause." She wasn't just any woman or any wife, shall we say. She was a particular, specific woman who was the wife of a trusted military man, and a second trusted military man, and a third man who was his advisor and counselor. None of what they said to David deterred him. David was determined, he was deliberate, and in one sense you could say that King David, who at times was a man after God in his heart, God's own heart, David was also a predator. Now, there's a lot said about predators and about men being predators these days who prey upon helpless individuals. And you can get yourself in an awful lot of trouble in being found out to be a predator. None of that deterred David. So we might ask the question, who was Eliam? Who was Eliam? Well, we know, of course, it said she was the father. He was the father of Bathsheba. But who was he? He was the father of Bathsheba, but who was he? Well, let's look in 1 Chronicles 3, verse 5, and then we'll go on to one other, and we'll find a little bit more about this. As I said, you don't find very many stories about her. You find snippets of verses here and there about her, and when you put them all together, it's shocking what was known about her and how it influenced the outcome of this story. She is and has been world famous. 1 Chronicles 3 and verse 5. 1 Chronicles 3 and verse 5. Verse 1 talks about the sons of David who were born to him in Hebron by other wives. And in verse 5, these sons were born to David in Jerusalem, and they list Shemaiah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon. Four by Bathsheba. The one time it's not Bathsheba, but Bathsheba. Bathsheba gave David four sons, and one of them was Solomon, the other was Nathan. Then in in the last part of verse 5, four by Bathsheba, the daughter of Ammoniel. Well, who is he? Well, you find out that is the word that is used for I lost my place there. Ammoniel instead of her father's other name. Eliam, that's where it is. We knew him as Eliam. His name was also Ammoniel. That was her father. And you will find that he was one of the mighty powerful men of David's guard. Let's go to 2 Samuel 23 and verse 8. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 8. And we'll put all this together in the light of the question that these people asked David. You realize, of course, this is, which you don't just get that when you read the story itself without this background. 2 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 8. These are the names of the mighty men whom David had, and it lists several of them, chief among the captains. And then you find in verse 34, it lists Eliphelet, and then next is Eliam, the son of Ahithophel the Gilonite. So Bathsheba's father was one of the 30 powerful men that was in David's guard. It was their job and responsibility to take care of David and to make sure he didn't get slaughtered. That was a powerful position and a very honorable position for men in those days to have. It was their job to keep David from being killed. I don't know, it popped in my mind when I moved to, when I left here in 91, I moved to Northwest Indiana, and ultimately I was we were assigned to Hammond, and it had been 600-700 men attending church, and the day or so I got there, I was introduced to the security division of the church to take care of difficulties, and one man made sure he let me know he was second in command of security. And I said, well, what's your job? He said, well, it's my job to throw myself in front of you if someone tries in to kill you. I thought, say what? It's your job to throw yourself in front of me so that you take the bullet instead of me. I thought this was the Church of God. Well, he said, you know, you got to remember Milwaukee. And I said, yeah, I remember, but there may be other things you didn't understand. Anyway, this was the job of the 30 to take care of David. Bathsheba's father was one of those powerful men who took care of David. And so the people said, are you sure, David? You realize she is the wife of Uriah. She is the daughter of Eliam. It says in verse 34, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel. So that's the next question. Who was Ahithophel? 2 Samuel 15 and verse 12. We get just another snippet about these individuals who were a part of this story, very much a powerful part of this story. 2 Samuel 15 and verse 12. Oh, I'm in 1 Samuel, sorry. 2 Samuel 15 and verse 12. I can always tell I'm in the wrong place when it doesn't say what I thought it said. 2 Samuel 15, verse 12 said, Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite. Now this was at the time when Absalom, one of the sons of David, had declared his own independence, wanted to be king, and he was actually trying to kill his father David, King David. So at this time, Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor. Another very powerful man and right-hand man to King David, asking for David's guidance, or giving David guidance and trustworthy opinions of certain things. And you will find that Ahithophel's counsel was legend. He was known for his wisdom. It was almost on an equal par with the Word of God. In 2 Samuel 16 and verse 23, it says this, "Now the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. He was well known for his sound-mindedness and his good advice." So we have Uriah the Hittite, a soldier who was a soldier's soldier. We have his father, his father-in-law, Bathsheba's father, was one of the 30, a powerful military man. And then Ahithophel, who was a powerful, well-known, respected, highly respected counselor for David. So Bathsheba was the daughter of Eliam, a powerful and famous military man. She was the granddaughter of Ahithophel, who had a privileged place as David's trusted counselor. So you can glean from that that Bathsheba was a military child, and she was accustomed, as many children are as they grow up in the military family, to moving among the elite in high places even as a child. They have access to certain individuals. So I guess you might say, did she already know David? Did he already know her? She was involved in these families who were close, very close to David. It seems illogical for to say that she wasn't knowledgeable of David and he wasn't knowledgeable of her. It is believed that she was fairly young at the time. How much younger than David? If he was 50, she may have been 30, 35, but she was quite a bit younger. And as it said, she was an absolutely gorgeous woman. So I would assume that David noticed her over the years of her growing up with her father and grandfather. She was a military child. She was married to Uriah, a soldier, a Hittite, and he wasn't just any soldier. You'll find in 2 Samuel 23, and verse 39, that he is also in this list of 30. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 39. Well, verse 8, I read this before, but in verse 8 it talks about David had, and it lists these men who were chief, who they were famous. And you go down the whole chapter and it lists a lot of men. We won't read them all, but in verse 39 it said Uriah the Hittite. He was last in the list, but he wasn't last in being loyal and faithful. He was an absolutely loyal, dedicated, faithful soldier, a soldier's soldier. And we'll read a little bit about this in a minute. He was one of David's 30 guardsmen, one of the elite soldiers. So Bathsheba's father and husband were both part of David's elite guard. Her husband was a disciplined soldier, loyal and faithful, as I said, to David and to the nation of Judah and the nation and the Israelites. Who was Uriah? I don't know that it's a necessary part, but you will find in 2 Samuel 11, it states, as it states quite a few other places, and calls him Uriah. And it specifically says the Hittite. Why did it have to add that? Or why did it add that he was a Hittite? What difference did it make? 2 Samuel 11 and verse 3 says, so, and this is the story we've already read, David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, are you sure? I'm sure you're aware of the fact this is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Didn't say a Jewish fellow, but a Hittite individual. Who were the Hittites? Well, I don't have a commentary to read from you, but if you can read about this in commentaries and biblical dictionaries, they were a people descended from Heth, who was the second son of Canaan, the fourth son of Ham. We'll find this back in Genesis 10 and verse 6, just to add this to the story flow. Genesis 10 and verse 6. The story of the sons of Noah and of their sons also. Genesis 10 verse 1 said, this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then in verse 6 it comes to Ham. It says the sons of Ham were Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, or as it's called in other places, Phut, P-H-U-T, and Canaan. Then in verse 15, it says, Canaan also begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, who it is said is the father, or acknowledged to be the father of the Hittites, or the Hethites, coming from the Hamitic genealogy. The Hittites were once an empire that vied even with Egypt and Syria, Assyria, and they occupied that area of Asia Minor and the land of the Canaanites and Palestine. Their religion was a mixture of Egyptian and Babylonian deities, and it was pagan to the core. You'll find that as Israel conquered the land, at least in part, many of the Hittites were driven out and they were slaughtered, but some weren't driven out, they remained, and Israel intermarried with some of those. In David's day, which was about 1,000 B.C., when he fled from Saul, you'll find that some of David's followers were Hittites warriors, and they were loyal to David. We'll find this in 2 Samuel 26, verses 5 and 6. 2 Samuel 26, this is the story about when David became aware of the fact that Saul was stalking him to kill him, and the story about when Saul went into the cave to, I believe it's to relieve himself. 2 Samuel 26 and verse. You won't find 26 in 2 Samuel. It's not there. It's 1 Samuel 26. 1 Samuel 26 and verse 5. David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped. And David saw the place, and Saul lay within the camp, and the people encamped around. It's a different story, but the same outcome, that he was out to kill David. David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite, one of the soldiers with him, and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, who will go down with me? And of course, they volunteered. David had one of the Hittites as a soldier among them. He also had Uriah, who was one of the 30. From what Uriah said to David in 2 Samuel 11, it appears possibly that Uriah had adopted the Jewish religion. Let's look at this in 2 Samuel 11, verse 11. This is the story where David had brought him in to hide what he, David, had done. And he told him to go home, but Uriah didn't. And so in 2 Samuel 11, verse 11, verse 10, David said, it was told David, Uriah didn't go to his house. So David said to Uriah, didn't you come from a journey? Why didn't you go to your home? And Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are dwelling in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in open fields. Shall I then go to my house, eat, drink, and lie with my wife? Notice what he said to David, as you live and as your soul lives, I will not do this thing. He refused to obey what David told him to do. But the point is, Uriah, a Hittite who came from a pagan group of people, spoke very favorably of the ark. The ark and Israel and Judah dwelling in tents. He was a very disciplined soldier. He was faithful to the king. He was a Hittite. Notice he spoke favorably of the ark. He did not say, that black dumb box that you Jewish boys have. He did not say that. He spoke as if it was something that he had admiration and faith toward. He was a Hittite, Hamitic genealogy. And it appears from the reading of Eliam, Ahithophel, and others mentioned as to where they came from, it appears that they and Bathsheba were of Semitic heritage. Now, if all that be true, then Bathsheba also married outside her race, married outside her color, but apparently did marry inside her religion, if indeed he was that favorable and he was a proselyte of the Jewish faith. So now back to the story that unfolds in this passion-filled drama, Act 1. Bathsheba was alone. Her husband was gone off to war. David was alone, and he was told, we don't need you, stay home. That's the beginning of something that could escalate into something very inflammatory. Bathsheba was alone. Her husband was gone off to war. As we read in 2 Samuel 11, it was in the evening. She was taking a bath, or other places show that she was washing herself. And the fact that she later got pregnant showed that her menstrual cycle was over. So it could have been the ritualistic washing after the menstrual cycle was over. It isn't said. It just said she was bathing or taking a bath. She was washing herself. Possibly it was just a bath. Again, we ask ourselves certain questions at this juncture. Since her father and her husband were in the military, and David was their military leader, had they met and talked at other times and other places? Had they ever noticed each other before this? Did she know that this was David's home that was next to where she was taking the bath? Did she know that David was home? Did David know? It appears he didn't, but you never know. There are no real answers to that, just speculation about it, the way it all came about. Did she also know that her bath was in full view of David's roof? Was this open-air bath planned? Now, if you've followed, and I don't expect many, but if you've listened to any rape cases of juries, they quite often try to prove that it was the woman's fault. She was the culprit. Even though this guy had raped 15 others, in this case, she was the culprit that caused him to do that, because if she hadn't dressed the way she dressed, he never would have done it. If she hadn't been where she was, it never would have happened. And they do that to embarrass and humiliate the woman and free the man. I watched a TV program that happened to be about similar things to David and Bathsheba. Several years ago, I had a physical exam by a doctor in Merrillville, Indiana, and he was an MD from Ghana, and he practiced alternative medicine, and I had to go back later for another visit with him, and he was busy when I came, so I had to wait about an hour. So I sat in the office waiting room, and they had a huge big screen TV, and it was the Oprah show that was on. So I watched it. Sometimes I like to watch Oprah. Sometimes I don't. This one was very interesting. She was interviewing Magic Johnson and his wife together. I think most of you know Magic Johnson was an All-American basketball player at Michigan State in the 70s. And he was famous for his battles with Larry Bird, Larry Legend, he was known as. And it all came down to the NCAA Finals. And Magic won and Bird lost. And then Magic became famous in Los Angeles as an NBA basketball player of great exploits. On the court and off the court also. And this is what Oprah was talking to him about, and she was very blunt. She didn't hold much back. After quite a few years in the NBA, he learned that he was HIV positive. And there are reasons why you get HIV positive. So she was quizzing him. As I said, she was brutal with her questions. He was very complimentary to Oprah, but she was blunt with her questions. She said, and I wrote a lot down what she had said, "Is it true, rumor has it, that after the basketball games are over, women are lined up waiting for you?" And he kind of chuckled a little bit, laughed very sheepishly, and you know, I said, "Yeah, that's kind of the way it was, you know, they were there waiting for me." That made it look like it was the women who were the problem, not Magic. If they hadn't have been there. Of course, he tried to make a joke out of it. So, some, I guess, try to make Bathsheba the culprit, that had she not been there doing that, it never would have happened. Well, maybe so, maybe not. As I said, Jesus didn't say it's a sin to see an extremely beautiful woman and look another second. He said it is a sin to lust after that in your heart, and thoughts become reality, especially if you have put them into your heart and made them a part of your thinking. David sent messengers first to find out who she was. Then he sent people to bring her to him for a particular, specific reason. And I don't think it was to talk about the weather, hot as it was. He had something in mind. The question, though, is why did she go? Did she have to? Could she have slapped his face so hard that it rang for 30 minutes? Well, we in modern America don't understand the culture of some societies, nations, even as close back as England, where they were ruled by a king. And the king, like King Henry VIII, was the law. If he wanted that woman, he got that woman. He didn't like what the Catholic Church taught, so he scuttled the Catholic Church, started his own church so that he could divorce and get remarried. And it is said also that he got rid of one or two of his wives because whatever he didn't like or they didn't do, he just got rid of them. The king was God, in a sense. Here, the king of the mighty nation of Israel asked for her to come to his home, and he sent people to bring her. Why did she go? Was it because as a child she had enamored him? She had seen him? She was, in a childish way, in love with him because of his power and his stature and his charisma? Was she already enamored with him? As I said, had she already given him her phone number? The culture was different. If the king desired a woman, he usually got her, and they had very little choice. If they said no, They were as good as dead. They couldn't get a job anywhere. They couldn't make it anywhere. They were outcasts, and the king made sure that was their punishment for saying no. So why did she go? Maybe, humanly speaking, she had no other choice. She had a choice, and she chose to go. There seemed to be no force on David's part other than he sent people to bring her. And there seemed no reluctance on the part of Bathsheba. But you would think in later years she would have had to know full well the intent of the request. She had a choice and she went. Was it orchestrated? Was she lonely, sexually frustrated? Was her husband devoted to being a good soldier and he didn't think of her, he thought of the military? Did she think of her husband and count the cost? Did she look generations ahead to what would happen if she did? Did David, because he suffered generationally because of what he did, and God told him he would do that because of what David had done. Marilyn Monroe held sway over Joe DiMaggio and John and Robert Kennedy. One of the famous beautiful women of old said, "I don't mind it being a man's world if they will let me be a woman." She knew that she could hold sway. Bathsheba had to know that her husband was killed, murdered by her lover to cover his mistake. She had to live with those thoughts the rest of her life. She also had to know that her action with David played a part in the death of her grandfather, Ahithophel. When Absalom left David's court and followed his own, Ahithophel went with Absalom. And Ahithophel asked them advice on what to do. And Ahithophel, who by this time knew what had happened, and he was angry, he hated David. He said, "Let me go with 12,000 men, and we will kill him. I will kill him. I will make sure, and you won't have any problem anymore." And so Absalom asked another one of the individual, and he said, "No, let's do it this way. You know how David is. He will make you think one thing's happening, and he'll get you. We will do it this way." And Absalom selected the second man's advice, and he rejected Ahithophel. So Ahithophel knew he had no authority at all after that. He was no longer the trusted counselor. He died inside. He went home, put his house in order, and he committed suicide. So she also had to know that what she did in part played a small part in her grandfather committing suicide. That's not to blame her, just to say that it happened. On the other side of the story, though, you will find in looking at following history that she became one of David's wives, and she was now in the king's castle, not in the military barracks. You will also find, which I read a while ago in 1 Chronicles 3:5, that she gave David four sons. None by Uriah, it says. Four sons she gave to David. And you will find also that two of them wound up in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the Messiah. So, humanly speaking, of Bathsheba, though she made a horrible mistake, she was responsible for half of what Solomon became, the wisest and the richest man in Babylon. That's another book. The richest man, although God provided the wealth and the wisdom, she nevertheless developed in her womb Solomon. So she had to have some impact on Solomon, and it seems that Solomon treated her very nicely, wonderfully honored and respected his mother. So she must have given him some good qualities that she was able to pass along to her son. And maybe because Solomon had a difficulty with women and he had 1,000 at bay, if you can use that term, maybe he got that from the knowledge of what his father and mother did. But nevertheless, you will find two of her sons Solomon and Nathan are listed in leading part of the genealogy leading to the Messiah through the lines of Joseph and Mary. You find that in Matthew 1, verse 6 and 16, and in Luke chapter 3, verse 31. You can find that in reading the harmony of the gospel. You may find it in other. I think I found that little tidbit in the companion Bible, but just look around. You will find it coming down from the beginning of it to it comes to Solomon in one place, and the next time you look at over in the other one, it's Nathan. So it splits with Solomon and Nathan, and it goes to the two lines of Joseph and Mary, leading to the genealogy of the Messiah. So, why would God allow that to happen if she was such a hideously, monstrously evil individual? And as far as that's concerned, David was just as guilty, or more so than she. Why did God allow him to be in the line of the Messiah? God does not always find perfect people to use in his plan. We are not perfect Christians. We are sincere Christians, hopefully, but we're not yet perfect. You will find, I don't find anything where God said anything to Bathsheba. Now, that doesn't mean he did or didn't, but you don't find it. But he did say a lot to David, and he promised David he would have hell on earth because of what he did, because David did it deliberately with a forethought and intent. Stubbornly, he wanted it his way, he got it his way, but he didn't like the results. All that was said to David, and it came on David. I've said before, in all likelihood, Bathsheba was very young when she married David. He was about 50. Maybe she was 30, 35, I don't know. But you will find in 1 Kings 1:15, at David's death, it's talking about David, and it says this, 1 Kings 1:15, Bathsheba went into the chamber to the king. He wanted his words confirmed. No, this is one of the priests telling Bathsheba to confirm his words to David. So Bathsheba went into the chamber of the king, and it says, now the king was very old, and this Abishag the Shunammite was serving and taking care of it. So Bathsheba bowed and did homage to the king, and he said to her, what's your wish? And she said, my lord, and he tells her, she tells him why. It appears from all of it that she was a young woman. We don't think of Uriah as David's age, so he married one of his age, and she was somewhat younger than David. Vulnerable, maybe not having the experience that was should have had, but anyway. So she, when her husband David died, she was a young widow. I can't find anything that is said of her about her in her last years. It is never stated in the Bible as to when, how, or even where Bathsheba died. Often you find, well, they died at Hebron and they were buried here and they slept with their fathers. It is said, not a word is said about Bathsheba, where she was buried. I liken the story of Bathsheba as it's listed in the Bible to a shooting meteorite. A shooting meteorite. She came out of nowhere. Whoever heard of Bathsheba until the night with David? And of course, she created quite a stir. She did. Then she disappeared. But two of her sons are in the line of the genealogy of the Messiah. Bathsheba was not an evil woman. She made a horrible choice, but she wasn't an evil woman. She may not have had much choice. As I said, she was married to a military man, and she was being sought after by the king of the nation, the greatest nation, I guess, in the world at that particular time. She, like us, was formed by her parents and the environment in which she grew up. She made some wrong decisions, and she participated in some actions in life that brought on some very famous wrong results. I'm assuming, though, that since she raised two pretty nice sons, at least in the beginning, and you don't read anything wrong about Nathan, a lot about Solomon, but in the beginning, Solomon had some really good qualities. I'm assuming that she learned from her painful lessons from these wrong decisions. She wasn't an evil woman of and by itself. But since she did produce those two famous sons, and nothing is ever said of her doing anything remotely near what she did with David, we're assuming that she lived a discreet and an honorable life after that tryst, because she learned from what she had done that was so wrong. And so, as I said, you don't think much about Bathsheba, and there aren't all that many things said. At least we don't think there is till we put them all together. But when we put it all together and see the full story, we, like Bathsheba, learning from her mistakes, can also learn by reading of the mistakes that Bathsheba made.